Chapter 4. We made good time the first day, partly because I refused to make the frequent stops that my mother usually demanded. At least I was the only human in my carriage, and didn't have to talk to my mother's hand-picked ladies. Lil slept most of the morning, dangling from the roof of the carriage like a little black tassel. We had gone only a few miles past the farm surrounding the castle grounds when I felt something crawl onto my lap. "Oh," I said when I realized that it was Shelton. He must have hidden in the folds of my gown just as he had on the day that we met. "What are you doing here?"
"I was thinking about what you said. I won't mind if you don't spend all your time with me. I like to travel and see the sights, so you go right ahead and do whatever it is you need to do. If you're going on a long trip, you need me to go with you. You never know when these might prove useful," he said, clacking his claws. "Where are we going, anyway?"
I sighed, knowing that I wasn't about to take him back and risk having my mother add to my entourage. "To visit Edric's parents. They live in Upper Monte Vista, the kingdom just to the north of Greater Greensward. I've never been there myself, but I hear it's very beautiful."
"Are there any oceans?" asked the little crab.
I shook my head. "No oceans, but there are a lot of mountains."
"That's too bad,"
he said, and then he scuttled up the wall to the window ledge.
"Whoa, this thing goes fast."
Grabbing hold with his claws, he fought to keep his balance until I put my hand up to help him. "I suppose," I said, although a moment before I'd been thinking how slowly we were moving.
"Where are we now?"
I leaned forward to look out the window. "We're in the Enchanted Forest. This is the only road that will take us where we want to go. These trees are hundreds of years old."
"Do they have coconuts?"
he asked, swiveling his eye stalks toward the tops of the trees. The only trees growing on the island where we'd met had been surrounded by fallen coconuts that the green crabs seemed to love. "No," I said. "Sorry."
"What are those?"
he asked, pointing at a doe and her fawn. Shelton was interested in everything. After growing up on a tropical island, he had lived on the ocean floor with coral, so all the things I was used to were new and exciting for him. He was full of questions about the animals, the size of the forest, the way some of the trees pulled up their roots and moved around, and why all the horses screamed and the ladies-in-waiting shrieked when a griffin flew by and I had to say a spell to send it on its way. When we passed a waterfall and saw a green-skinned nymph swimming in the pool at its base, his eye stalks twirled as he asked,
"Is that a mermaid?"
He was disappointed when I pointed out that she had legs instead of a tail, but he seemed pleased to have seen her at all. By mid-afternoon, I was already sore from the jolting of the carriage and tired of the stuffy air. Casting a spell on a leather pouch to make it leak-proof, I filled it with water for Shelton and wedged it in the corner of the carriage. The little crab was happily bobbing in the cool water when I had my coachman stop and went to meet the palfrey I'd been given. The dappled gray had been tethered behind the last carriage and left saddled and ready. I introduced myself before climbing onto her back, but she didn't seem interested in me or in the fact that we could talk to each other. I asked her name and learned that it was Gwynnie. She grunted as I settled myself in the saddle, but seemed eager when I asked her to trot toward the front of the line.
"He's so handsome," she said, nodding her head toward Edric. "All the girls have been talking about him."
Of course, I thought Edric was handsome, but I didn't know that horses looked at people that way, too.
"I've seen you with him around the stables. Do you think you could introduce me?"
"Sure, if that's what you really want." We trotted past my carriage to where Edric was riding with some of the knights. He'd stayed in the front most of the day, dropping back only long enough to talk to me or to see how everyone else was doing. I was proud of the way he had taken charge of our expedition, even though traveling this way hadn't been his idea. When I reached Edric's side, I smiled at him and said, "I have someone I'd like you to meet. This is Gwynnie."
Gwynny laid her ears flat against her skull.
I don't want to meet him. I meant that good-looking stud the human is riding.
I had to admit, in his silver-trimmed bridle and matching saddle, Edric Stallion did look very nice. Bright Country pricked his ears at Gwynny and whinnied hello. She whinnied back, so I knew they'd get along just fine. How far are we from Upper Monte Vista? I asked Edric.
If we keep going at this rate, we'll be there in 2 or 3 days. I can't wait for you to see it. It's one of the most beautiful kingdoms in the world. You'll love the mountains. We have the highest peaks and the deepest valleys.
What about swamps? I asked. You know how much I like swamps. I still wanted to get married in one, although I hoped it would be the one back home. Edric glanced at me as if I should have known better.
There aren't any swamps in Upper Monte Vista. That's why I came to Greater Greensward to find the Mead Ward and happened to meet that witch.
You mean that when Bradston made up the story about seeing your true love's face in the bottom of a cup of Mead Ward tea, you came all the way to my kingdom? I didn't know you were gullible enough to go that far.
Edric gave me a disgusted look. I prefer to think of it as trusting.
I've met your little brother. I can't imagine why you'd trust him about something like that.
Brad can be very convincing when he wants to be, Edric said, shrugging. It's how he gets away with so much.
So what else can you tell me about your kingdom, aside from its deplorable lack of swamps? Do you have any enchanted forests?
No, but we do have griffins and rocks and trolls in the mountains. On the higher slopes, there are other creatures that no one has seen, but we know they are there by their giant footprints.
Uh-huh. Are there any other differences that I should know about?
We like our food a little spicier in Upper Monte Vista than in Greater Greensward.
Oh, really? You never seemed to think that there was anything wrong with our food.
There isn't, he said, patting his nicely rounded stomach.
I don't think Edric ever met a dish he didn't like. Anything else? I asked.
Well, yes. I probably should have told you this before. The people of my kingdom aren't as comfortable with magic as the citizens of Greater Greensward are. A lot of my parents' subjects don't like witches.
You must be extremely open-minded for someone from Upper Monte Vista.
I am, he said, looking smug. But then, you've always known that I am extraordinary.
Gwynny flicked her ears when I shifted my weight in the saddle.
If your people don't like witches, I'd better not do any magic while I'm there, I said. I don't want to turn them against me before we even meet.
Edric frowned.
Are you sure that you can do it? You're used to using magic to take care of things.
Now you sound like my mother. I don't have to do magic all the time.
You'll see.
We rode in silence after that, involved in our own thoughts. I was irritated that no one seemed to think that I could get along without my magic. It was true that it had become an important part of my life, but it wasn't all there was to me. I was a lot more confident than I used to be, and more capable, and I realized that most of what I valued about myself was tied to my magic one way or another. If I couldn't use it, would I be as confident or as capable? By late afternoon, the enchanted forest had given way to the more normal kind, with trees that didn't move around and no creature more frightening than a bear. I was slapping at the flies that couldn't seem to leave Gwynny alone when a voice shouted, "Hello!" and a group of riders appeared through the trees. The man in front was oddly dressed in a leather jerkin and little pointed hat. His beard was trimmed in the middle so that it formed 2 long curls on either side of his chin. Although the knights who were my escort drew their swords and urged their horses into a protective circle around us, Edric seemed delighted to see the man.
"He's from Upper Monte Vista," said Edric. "We must be near the border."
Reluctant to sheathe their swords, the knights sat watching the stranger's approach with wary eyes.
"Hello,"
he said again as his horse stopped in the center of the road, forcing us to stop as well. Sweeping his hat from his head, he bowed low in the saddle while smiling broadly at Edric. "I'm Broadnik Bentwyn from Chancewold. We heard that our prince was returning home and hoped that you and your party would honor us by dining in our fair town tonight. It's good to see you back, Your Highness." Edric nodded graciously and replied, "We'd be delighted to take you up on your offer, Goodman Bentwyn. I've missed a good Montevistian meal these last few months." I heard a knight chuckle behind me. Apparently my family and the kitchen staff weren't the only ones in the castle who knew about Edric's appetite. "That you'll have, Your Highness," said Broadnik, "along with some excellent entertainment, the likes of which you won't get anywhere but our kingdom. Now, if you'll excuse us, we'll be heading home to tell everyone to prepare for your arrival." Twirling his cap on one finger, he set it on his head and turned his horse to face back the way he'd come. With a signal from Broadnik, the other riders turned as well and trotted off into the forest.
"Wasn't that nice?" said Edric, looking as pleased as if he'd just won a round in a tournament.
"Very," I said, although I wasn't nearly as happy about it. When the knights returned to their places and we could talk without being disturbed, I leaned closer to Edric.
"You could have discussed it with me before telling that man that we'd eat in their town. Do you even know how far away it is? What if we want to stop before then or keep going past it?"
Edric frowned.
"You didn't ask me about changing our plans. You just let your mother tell us what to do."
"But she was right, especially if it's true that the people of Upper Montevista don't like magic. Flying there on a magic carpet would have been a big mistake."
"Maybe," said Edric. "But you could have talked to me about it before you made up your mind."
I tightened my fingers on the reins, making Gwynny toss her head and snort.
"If you don't want to do this," I said, "you should have told me."
"I didn't say that I didn't want to do it," said Edric. "I just meant..."
"Never mind."
Edric and I didn't have much to talk about for a while after that, although Bright Country and Gwynny continued to nicker as if they'd known each other for years. I listened to them for a time, but soon grew tired of hearing about their favorite grains and what pastures they liked best. The sky was graying when we finally left the trees behind and the road curved to meet a river. With the ground rising and falling in rock-strewn swells ahead of us, it wasn't until we topped one of the hills that we saw a town nestled in the sweeping curve of the riverbank. A new-looking stone wall stood between it and the river.
"That," said Edric, "is Chancewold."
"You mean you've been there before?" I asked.
"Once, before I met you. Look, there's Goodman Bentwyn now."
The sun was setting as we reached the town and met the crowd that had come to greet us. At Broadnik's suggestion, a small group of men accompanied some of my knights and servants to a site downriver large enough to accommodate all of our tents, while the rest of our welcoming party led the way through the narrow streets to the town square. The air was rich with the smell of roasting meat and the garlands of flowers that draped the fronts of the surrounding buildings. Although the cobblestones had been swept clean, the overlooked feathers and bits of straw proved that the farmers had held their market there, probably that very day. Tables and long benches had been set up in the square, and women wearing their best gowns bustled around bringing platters of food and flagons of ale. The whole place had a festive air, as if they were celebrating some sort of holiday. From the way they looked at Edric, I guessed they were. I listened as the men greeted him like a long-lost friend, while the women smiled and curtsied. A few maidens actually fluttered their eyelashes at him, something I thought no one really did. Edric treated them all with equal respect, even calling many of the men by name. The tables had been set up to form a square with a narrow aisle leading to the center. We took our seats at the head table along with Broadnik and the other local notables. Those townsfolk who weren't serving also went to their benches, where they remained standing, watching Edric expectantly. I could tell that he hadn't noticed, because his attention was already on the food set before us.
"Edric," I whispered,
He dipped his hands in the water offered by a little boy with damp hair and a missing front tooth.
Edric,
I said a little more loudly while he dried his hands and eyed a roasted goose on the platter closest to his plate. Edric, I said again, jabbing him with my elbow as inconspicuously as I could when he leaned across to me to reach for the bread.
What?
He said, nearly dropping it.
I think they want you to say something,
I whispered, nodding toward the townspeople.
Hmm?
Edric's mouth was already full. He looked up and saw everyone watching him. Swallowing hastily, he wiped his mouth with the back of his hand and stood.
Good folk of Chancewold, it is wonderful to be back in Upper Monte Vista among my own people. It is even better that you invited my beloved Princess Emeralda of Greater Greensward and myself to eat with you tonight. Thank you for offering us your gracious hospitality and all of this marvelous food. Now, since I'm sure you are all hungry, and I know I am, let's dispense with any more formality and enjoy this delightful meal.
While Edric spoke, the townspeople smiled and nodded, studying me with interest when he called me his beloved, and laughing when he said that he was hungry, as if indulging a favorite son or nephew. Apparently, Edric's habits were as well known in Chancewold as they'd become at my castle. The meal was a feast with roast poultry and game, a full side of beef, and a stew made of fish cut into chunks in a peppery sauce. Even the vegetables were hotter than I was used to, but only a few things were so spicy that I couldn't eat them. Edric, however, ate everything, no matter how hot. He smacked his lips and groaned with pleasure more than once, although he did reach for his flagon of ale to wash down each bite of the fish. We were nearly through the meal when five young couples dressed in brightly colored clothes filed into the center of the square, and a musician strummed his first note. A drum and a pipe soon joined in as the couples began to dance. Having nearly eaten his fill, Edric looked up to watch the dancers whirl past. That's marvelous, I said as a male dancer tossed his partner into the air and caught her.
It's a traditional folk dance, said Edric. Every movement, every color, every note has a special meaning.
So tell me, what do they mean? I asked. Edric shrugged.
Don't ask me. I never can remember all that stuff.
They certainly seem to like you here, I said as yet another maiden flashed him a very warm smile. Edric shrugged again.
I killed a dragon for them when it came out of the mountains to eat the farmer's cattle.
A dragon? I said, horrified. We'd come to know quite a few dragons, some of whom had become very close friends. Edric patted my hand.
That was before I knew how to talk to them, before I knew any personally.
You wouldn't kill one now, would you? I asked, shivering.
Of course not, he said, giving me a half smile. I'd have you talk to him until he flew away.
The dancing wasn't the only entertainment we had that night. After the young couples left the square, a score of older men and women took their places and engaged in a contest of high-pitched warbling that they said was the way mountain folk talked to their neighbors. When an older man with a barrel chest won the contest, a tiny red-headed woman came out to demonstrate local bird calls. She started with a few songbirds, then moved on to the calls of bigger birds, such as the eagle, the phoenix, and the roc, the biggest bird of all. Each time she paused to take a breath between roc screeches, we could hear horses screaming in terror just outside the town square. I'm sure I wasn't the only one who was relieved when she sat down. The tables had been cleared, the last of the ale poured, when a maiden with silvery braids, and probably more than a little fairy blood, approached our table and flashed a smug grin at me, then gave Edric a saucy wink.
When you were here before, Prince Edric, we had a different sort of contest, she said. My friends and I were wondering if you'd like to do it again.
Yes, called a maiden from one of the tables. Let's have another kissing contest.
Edric turned a deep red and his eyes flicked nervously toward me.
I don't think that's such a good idea,
he said, and then he very pointedly gazed up at the stars.
Look at that, it's gotten very late. I think it's time we go to our tents. You wanted an early start in the morning, didn't you, Emma?
Of course, I said, and then I turned to the girl leaning against the table. Prince Edric doesn't need a contest. He already knows who the best kisser is.
I do indeed, he said, sounding relieved. Taking my hand, he leaned toward me for a kiss. It wasn't long, but it was warm and tender.
The silver-haired girl turned on her heel and flounced off to her seat while the other maidens glared at me. When Edric had eaten his last bite and taken his last sip, Broadnik said,
"We'll escort you to your tents. Your men have pitched them farther away from the river in a level spot nestled between the hills. We'll have to pass a bend in the river to get to it, so stay close together. It isn't safe by the river at night."
Clearing his throat, he glanced at the men seated nearby before turning back to Edric.
"That's something we wanted to talk to you about, but we wanted you to have the chance to enjoy your dinner first. We've been having a problem with sea monsters the last year or so. It's why we built the wall. We were hoping you might be able to help us."
Edric stood and patted Ferdy, whom he rarely took off anymore.
"Don't worry," he said. "A sea monster that could make it this far upriver won't be any problem for my singing sword."
"You have a singing sword?"
asked the boy, who was missing a tooth.
"Can I see it?"
While an admiring crowd of men and boys gathered around Edric and Ferdy to escort them to the river, I was left to follow with my ladies-in-waiting. Some of the local maidens stayed behind to help clear the square. The rest tagged along as we filed through the streets. From the venomous glances they gave me, I was sure they were hoping that I'd trip and fall into the river head first, leaving Edric available again. Although enough townsfolk carried torches to fend off the darkness, they couldn't block the night's sounds as we entered the rugged terrain surrounding the town. Unseen birds called warnings at our approach, and deep-throated insects thrummed in the rocks nearby. A howling in the distance was plaintive, with an oddly human quality. Edric had told me that werewolves plagued his kingdom off and on. They must have come back. As we passed the end of the wall and drew closer to the river, the rushing water nearly drowned out the cries of the birds, and I could smell the pungent odor of fresh water and dead fish. The women from town who had gone this far left us, some of the torch-bearing men hurrying them back. The rest of the men became more vigilant, breaking off their conversation with Edric to study the river. I noticed that the men around me were armed with pitchforks and stout sticks, as if they could be of any use against a sea monster. "The river looks so peaceful," I said to the young man closest to me.
"It looks peaceful because it's deep," he said, holding his torch high. "This is the Yalu River. Its headwaters are in the mountains north of here. By the time it gets this far, it's very deep and stays that way as far as the sea. You wouldn't believe what we've seen in these waters this past year. Some monsters have started going upriver to spawn, but the real horrors are the ones that come here to eat them. We used to enjoy walking by the river, but now it isn't safe for man or be..."
Something enormous splashed in the middle of the river, sending wavelets over the bank almost to our feet. Torches were held higher, their light reflecting off the water where ripples continued to arrow in our direction. Whatever was out there was coming our way. Their swords drawn, my knights ran to join Edric on the riverbank.
"Get back, Your Highness," said the young man as others hustled me behind an outcropping of rock.
I could hear the cries of the ladies-in-waiting as they huddled together close by. The men hovered around me for a moment, but when one of the villagers near the water called out, they ran back to their companions, shouting, "Stay there!" to me, and taking their torches with them. I tried to follow them, only to have the one man who had been left to guard me block my way. Retracing my steps, I strained to hear what was going on, while trying to think of how I could help without it being obvious that I was using magic. I heard running feet, the slap of something large and wet on stone, a man crying out, then Ferdy's familiar voice. "Slash, hack, chop, and whack," he sang, which meant that Edric was fighting the sea monster. Hiking up the hem of my gown, I was trying to climb the rock to see if I could help, when there was a high-pitched keening and the rush of wings, and something hit me in the chest, knocking me back the few feet I had climbed. I landed on the ground with an oof, then struggled to sit up, realizing when I couldn't that something heavy was weighing me down and had started to lick my face. My hands met scales when I tried to push it off.
"Emma," said the voice of an adolescent dragon. "I've been looking all over for you. See what I won."
I rubbed my eyes and tried to see my assailant in the near dark. From the sound of his voice, I knew it was my friend Ralph, but I couldn't make out what he was doing.
"Ralphie," I said, "you shouldn't be here."
Ralph backed out of the shadow of the rock and into the moonlight.
"I had to come, Emma. I've been looking all over for you, and then I heard you were here, and I had to show you my award. See?"
he said, using his claws to hold up a ribbon that dangled from his neck. Some sort of oddly shaped stone hung suspended from the ribbon, twirling in the dim light. "How did you win it?" I asked, peering at the stone.
"I graduated from Dragon Geography class with top honors," he said. "We're going to have a big feast to celebrate, and my parents and I want you to come. It's tomorrow night, and..."
The sea monster roared, and it must have been fairly close, because water splattered down on us from above, drenching us both. Then the sound receded as if the monster were moving off. "Thank you for inviting me, Ralph, but you shouldn't be here. If those men see you, you'll be in big trouble. Please go back to your parents' cave. I'll come see you as soon as I get home."
"But Emma,"
Ralph whined, thrashing his tail,
"I really want you to come. It won't be the same unless..."
"Over here," someone shouted. "It's a dragon." I glanced up to see the man who had been guarding me standing only a few yards away, hefting a pitchfork in his hand.
"Ralph,"
I whispered, "please go."
"That man has a pokey thing, Emma,"
said Ralph.
"I can't go. He might hurt you. Where's Edric? Why isn't he here to keep you safe?"
"That man isn't going to hurt me, Ralph, but he will hurt you if you don't go. Please, Ralph, just..."
"Back away from it, Your Highness," shouted the man. "Even the small ones are deadly."
Other men had begun to gather behind him, including some of my knights. Ralph began taking deep breaths to stoke the fire in his belly. He had only recently begun eating gunga beans and hot flammy peppers to get his fire going. Although his flame was feeble compared to what it would be someday, it was enough to injure someone. I didn't have any choice. If I didn't use my magic, someone was bound to get hurt. The man with the pitchfork was edging around Ralph, with the little dragon turning to face him.
"Prince Edric," called the townsman, "here's another dragon for you to kill."
Edric shouted, but I couldn't make out his words. It was Ferdy's voice that rang out loud and true above the noise around me.
"Take that, you monster from the deep, it's time for your eternal sleep. With one more slice and one more whack, I'll see that you cannot come back."
I shrieked and froze where I was, pretending to be frightened. Holding my hand over my mouth as if I were terrified, I whispered the beginning of a spell.
"Hide this dragon, scale and claw, tooth and fiery breath."
The sea monster roared, and a huge chunk of bloody flesh flew over the boulder and slammed into my legs, sending me sprawling. The rest of the spell I was about to say flew out of my head. Ralph had built up a good flame. Nearly 5 feet long, it kept the men from getting too close. Unfortunately, maintaining such a big flame while dodging the jabbing pitchfork made him a little lightheaded and confused. By the time I was able to sit up and saw that Ralph had begun to fade from sight, he was whimpering and his flame was sputtering.
"That dragon's wearing a magic charm,"
shouted another townsman when Ralph had nearly faded away.
"Look, he's disappearing. Get him before he's gone altogether,"
yelled another voice. I groaned when I saw that the incomplete spell hadn't been enough. Only parts of the little dragon had disappeared. everything covered with scales had faded away, which meant that his body, wings, tail, and head were gone. His claws were gone, too, as were his teeth and the last of his flame. Unfortunately, his eyes were still visible, as were the pads of his feet and the tip of his nose. His award still dangled from his invisible neck, and when he ran toward me, I could see his damp footprints in the torchlight.
"Ralph," I said under my breath, "go home. Not until I know you're safe," he told me.
The men rushed me, pushing me away from Ralph so they could form a circle around him. Happy that I'd been forgotten once again, I took the opportunity to whisper a new spell.
"Murky fog come to this place. Of this dragon leave no trace, neither print nor sound nor scale. Of this dragon leave no trail."
A thick fog rolled in off the river, enveloping everyone and everything. It was a strangely silent fog, absorbing all the sounds Ralph made and some of the men's as well. While the men floundered around, trying to find Ralph without hurting each other, I backed away and called his name. A moment later, the little dragon bumped into me. Nudging me with his nose, he pushed me away from the men. When we had gone far enough that they couldn't hear us, I bent down and wrapped my arms around Ralph's neck.
"You're very brave, Ralph," I said. "Thank you for protecting me."
Ralph may have tried to say something, but the fog still absorbed his voice.
"I need to take the spells off you, but we have to be very quiet. Those men are awfully close. As soon as you're back to normal, you'll have to go home. And don't worry, I'll be fine. No one is going to do anything to me. Understand?"
With my arms around him, I could feel the little dragon nod. I said the spell quickly before anyone could interrupt us and was still hugging him when he reappeared.
"Remember, you're going to come see me when you go home again," said Ralph.
"I won't forget," I said. The little dragon licked my face with his hot, rasping tongue before slipping away into the night. Although I was relieved to see him go, my nerves still jangled. I hated the way doing magic in secret made me feel. When Edric and I were wed, if he became king of Upper Monte Vista, I'd be queen of this country. I didn't like the thought of lying to my future subjects, now or ever. The fog had disappeared into the night, leaving the air cold and clammy. The men soon found me and assumed that I'd wandered off while trying to get away from the dragon. Edric was with them, having dispatched the sea monster with Ferdy's help, but I could tell that he was not as jubilant about it as he would have been only a few years earlier. Getting to know dragons had made it harder for him to kill monsters, even when he didn't have a choice. Edric didn't tell me any details other than that he'd been sending some of his men to protect the villagers from passing sea monsters. He did, however, seem concerned about me.
"Are you sure you're all right?" he asked. "The men said you were in real danger."
I patted his arm. "I was fine. Ralph came looking for us, which wouldn't have been a problem if your friends from Chancewold hadn't seen him. He's gone now, but I promised we'd go for a visit as soon as we could." Yawning, I leaned against him and rested my head on his shoulder.
"Let's go find our tents," Edric said, hugging me to his side. "It's been a very long day."
I was fighting to keep my eyes open when he lifted the flap to my tent. Swaying on my feet, I gazed bleary-eyed through the opening, too tired to take another step. Edric swung me into his arms and kissed me on the cheek as he carried me inside, setting me on the bed in the corner. He was straightening up when Hortense stormed into the tent.
"Have you no sense of decency?" she hissed at him. "You shouldn't come anywhere near her tent at night. And you," she said, rounding on me, "you should be ashamed of yourself letting him in."
"We weren't doing anything," I mumbled sleepily, feeling like a small child.
"That doesn't matter. You two should never be alone in here, especially not at night. Do you know what you're doing to her reputation?"
Hortense said, turning back to Edric.
"But we're getting married as soon as we can arrange it," said Edric.
"Hm," said Hortense, "as if that mattered. Queen Chartreuse was right to send me. Who knows what you two would be up to if I weren't here?"
Having a lovely kiss goodnight, I thought as Hortense ushered Edric out of my tent. Too tired to change into my night clothes, I stretched out on the bed and fell asleep.